Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Holy shit.
Give me a Garrett, hell yeah.
Full Gear is just ended like 15 minutes ago. We're just sitting here chilling, and you know what? It's time. Dude, I mean, just, I guess let's just immediately jump right in. Just kind of overall feeling following the show. How are you feeling right now?
I'm very excited for the future of AEW. You know what? I'm just going to say that I was going to save this toward the middle, but I'll just say it now because it's on top of my head right now. Charlie, it has felt like every pay-per-view this year has been mired by an injury, a controversy, an overshadowing of a return, whatever. Something has always been taking the shine off of where it should be, which has always been right on the talent that should be at the top of the card. And Charlie, it feels like for the first time this year since Triple H took over, AEW was able to smack back in a meaningful way.
I like that. And, you know,
it's been like, it's because it's not they haven't had great pay-per-views. They've had great shows. And I think that's why WWE's had to step it up so much. But I think this is the first time, and it sucks that it took till November to get here. But I'm glad to say that it feels like there's nothing that they could do at Survivor Series that's going to top what we saw tonight.
That's a good point. And, you know, following All Out, I mean, when we went live, that press conference hadn't happened yet. And then after that press conference, everything just went to shit for the next couple
weeks. I mean, literally,
weeks.
When we were watching that show, the same sentiment for me, pretty much. Like, I felt like they finally got everything together. The matches weren't exactly to the quality that they had been previously in the year, but they were good enough. And we had that moment with the Acclaimed and Swerve in Our Glory, which obviously was huge. But... my God, Charlie, like, it just feels like we're finally to a place where we can move, you know, as I said in my tweets, and not that I want to keep going back to this, but, you know, it was time to let the past die and to kill it if we had to. And it feels like we did that tonight.
I agree. And yeah, man. So, geez. Let's get some stuff out of the way here. So, guys, we just made a Twitter, and some of you guys have been checking that out, tweeting us, letting us know. It's at Eat Sleep Elite. It's very simple. I mean, we kind of want it to be like a little community thing where we can all hang out, you know, just give us a follow. We'll follow you back. It's simple stuff like that. And we have our own Twitters. Garrett is at Bane Duke, and I am at O Charlie with an X instead of an A. Garrett streams on Twitch at the Duke of Derps. And Garrett, what are you streaming this week? Do you got a game you're playing right now?
I mean, I've been playing a lot of Overwatch 2 lately.
Okay.
I started a Let's Play of Assassin's Creed 4, which, obviously, anybody who's ever played that game or knows about it knows that's a pretty long, pretty thick game. But I don't think I'm going to, like, 100% it or anything. But I'm playing those right now. I'm playing that, some other things. I'm thinking about bringing Apex back, stuff like that, you know?
Absolutely. So, and, yeah, I mean... if this is your first time checking out our podcast, as you can see, we're on like all of your podcast feeds, Spotify, Amazon, Google, Apple, iHeartRadio. So
Pandora, I think. Yeah.
Like. Yeah. A whole gauntlet of them. So thanks for checking those out. If you like this, hit the follow or whatever and stick around and check out what we do. We get new weekly episodes every Sunday. So
absolutely. This is actually our third. If you'd been listening this week, if this is your first time listening, you'd have gotten three podcasts because we did the weekly show. And we did that a little earlier than we normally do in the week. And we did predictions for this show as well, which if you didn't see our predictions, make sure you check that out as well. We have that still in the podcast feed as well. So if you're curious what we were thinking going into the show, you can check that out. But yeah, I mean, Charlie, first of all, thank you to everyone that stuck with us through this first year of doing this. Like,
yeah,
it's been a journey, to say the least. And I'm just glad
to say, episode, Adam Cole's in-ring debut. It's kind of cool.
First episode, Adam Cole's in-ring debut. The most recent episode, the crowning of MJF. Just what an incredible year, you know, to go from there to there. I mean, you know, it didn't happen the way I don't think we expected, man, but
yeah,
boy,
and
boy am I can't say I'm disappointed. Like, my God, you know?
Agreed. And, you know, here we, overall, real quick, I'll say this before we jump in kind of from 0 hour to the end. We'll just spend some more time on some others because, my God, these matches are fucking, we had some really good stuff. But overall, I felt there was some good emotion tonight.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't expect in some cases. Some big surprises. Big surprise. Like, yes. Genuinely, Samoa Joe winning. I did not see that in the books. I would have picked the other two guys probably 5-6 times before I even thought of Samoa Joe. I could have convinced myself different ways. I didn't even consider Samoa Joe when we were doing the predictions. I was like, he's ROH champion. They're probably not going to do the double.
I heard one person say that before the show, and it was genuinely the guy that does the show. It was not Alvarez. It was one of the guys that does the show with him, and he just threw that out there as an idea because, you know, Ring of Honor doesn't really have TV anyway. So
yeah,
what difference does it make?
And I feel I'm very happy. And I think you said it best with the future, the product of the future, how we're looking right now with our two world champions being Jamie Hayter and MJF. I think that's a really good sign. And yeah, so let's just immediately hop into 0 hour unless I'm forgetting something. Yeah. Cause we don't really touch news or anything on this. So 0 hour. We kick right off the entrance. I think this entrance for Full Gear, fantastic. That big vertical screen in the middle really kind of brought everything out, and it made the stage feel that much bigger. Something sometimes AEW just has a stage where it doesn't feel like it's that big of a show.
I will say it was a little sad that we didn't have the tunnels, but I mean, they probably tried to make it work and it didn't, you know. And they were like, whatever.
Agreed. They probably couldn't make it work. So, you know, let's get a big old vertical screen along with four others. We have five different screens.
Mm-hmm.
Really look good. So the factory, they're going against Best Friends.
It's amazing to me how you watch Dark. If you watched Dark every week and just watched QT and what they do, you'd think they were like the least over people in the company. But then like you watch them on pay-per-view and everybody is so fucking into them as heels. It's incredible. Like,
QT, this is something we like to say. QT will always get the reaction. If this QT is the perfect guy for live shows, and that's why he's on literally almost every Elevation, and why he's on all these 0 hours, and why I do think now more than ever we're going to eventually see the factory get a run with these trios titles, and it's going to be the Freebird rule, and it's going to be a good time. So I'll just kind of take us through this. Right away, we get some Where's Danhausen chants. So Danhausen's not out there. For good reason. Chuck versus Solo kind of opens up our bid. Trent hits some nice combo moves with Rocky and Chuck.
Mm-hmm.
Shoddy Lee gets in there. Garrett, Shoddy Lee is selling incredible.
Shoddy Lee's doing everything great right now. I think Shoddy Lee realizes that he's getting a shot here and that he might not get another one for a little while because he's getting that momentum wave of, you know, just returning.
Take advantage of that on a pay-per-view buy-in.
Yes. Absolutely.
QT just ends up getting the heat that we all know he's going to get. He's getting whooped up by fucking everybody. Orange Cassidy comes in. Just some great reactions. The one that stuck out to me the most was with Nick Camarado. Excalibur, he mentioned he wants a black and orange velvet suit for the next pay-per-view, so someone pinmarked that because I need to know if this is going to happen. QT then goes on. He starts selling a really good DDT from Trent that I liked. Orange Cassidy and Lee Johnson, I think, was my favorite combo in this match. So we're kind of getting towards the end here. And something you mentioned to me was the pace. I thought the pace of this match was fucking just flowing so well. The Blue Thunderbomb by Shoddy Lee that he landed on Orange Cassidy. I mean,
that looked clean.
It really did. And Cole Carter, he gets tagged in. He gets some really good high velocity offense. I added a little note here. He's looking like a bit of a star, man. I can feel when he's out there, there's a little bit different of a presence. Like, I just feel like...
No, I know. If this guy turns into a star, beginning, I just don't know what they'd do with him. Like, he's...
Yeah, I don't know what it's going to be yet.
He's he almost just looks like slightly too young or something. I feel like it's the same problem Dante has, where they just look at him and they're like, man, I just don't see it yet, you know? With same with Dante, you know, like there's something about the way he looks. And it's not a knock on Dante or on Carter. It's just, I think that holds them back a little bit sometimes. I think that, you know, they need to fill out a little bit more before they can get that spot, you know?
So once Carter clears the ring, QT is kind of in there all alone. The boos are just fucking raining in. QT sucks, Chance. Danhausen, new music hits. This motherfucker's got teeth in a jar. I like to say shit is metal, and Danhausen was fucking metal.
Bro, you know what I think? That I have a theory about this. This is his Demon King character. He's not going to do this all the time. The very nice part, it's going to be like very nice, very evil. He's going to be, sometimes he's going to be very nice, Danhausen. Sometimes he's going to be very evil.
Oh my God, that is a good point. He walks in, he hits that German on QT that I thought, I was like, wait a minute now, that looked pretty good. He gets a teeth chant, Nick gets a mouthful of teeth, Danhausen ends up pinning Nick. I think overall,
the reason why I say that too, his face paint was different. I don't know if anybody noticed this.
It was. He had like blood on the bottom too.
Yeah. So I think this is like dark Danhausen almost. I think when he gets pushed to us, it's like with Finn when he gets pushed. Well, when he, you know, before he got rid of that gimmick, when he gets pushed to a certain point, he brings out the demon within him. You know, because Danhausen's gimmick. It's just in the same way that like Matt Hardy, for some reason I didn't think that was his name, but Matt Hardy's gimmick was that he was a 1,000-year-old, the evil spirit, right? Same thing with Danhausen, you know what I mean? Like, so there could be something you could actually play with there. Certainly Matt Hardy did. I mean, we saw that. It got real dark with him and Bray there for a little while. So, you know, like, I think it's, the opportunity is there if they want to play with it. And if they, you know what, Danhausen, I'm starting to understand why you're so popular.
We jump into Renee. She has an interview with our boy, Kinosuke Takeshita. He said he's happy to be back in AEW.
Dude, I was so happy when we cut to this.
Oh, he's officially All Elite. It's been his dream since he was a child to be a wrestler in America, and he's going to fight for his life in AEW. This is going to be my favorite story to follow in 2024, or 2023.
Now, question, Charlie. Is it fair to consider a Takeshita in AEW rookie next year? Because we've had this conversation, because we wanted to sneak him into this year, but he wasn't signed yet, and I don't think it would be fair with him getting signed at the very end.
He probably won't be, since he was featured so heavily for 4 months.
Okay.
You know?
But we can definitely get him into consideration, because
I'm thinking of this in hockey terms, right? If you go beyond your 9-day contract, that's your rookie season. But if those guys,
we should think about this a little more off of you, because I'm thinking we can do something like that, but I don't think it should be like, I think 4 months. I don't even know 4 months. I don't know. We don't know. You know what I mean? Yet. I don't think even still. As great as he is, I don't know if we've seen the full.
That's much more than Kenny's going to wrestle this year. You know, it's stuff like that.
Yeah, but Kenny would have wrestled 30 times this year if he could have. You know what I mean?
And he's going to get some more matches. Hey, that's the fucking seven. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, we'll get to it. We'll get to it.
Brian Cage, Ricky Starks, Big Papa Ricky. Them boys were swinging quick, man. I thought the mohawk on Cage was looking long. It was a long boy. He had a nice avalanche suplex. I mean, Cage was really just holding it down on offense pretty much throughout the beginning of this. He had a really nice knee to the head.
I thought he sold super well, too, though. I've been saying that a lot lately about Brian Cage, but he sells super good. Can't help it.
I wrote, Ricky, be careful of your neck, bro. I mean, he took a really weird one into like a turnbuckle, I want to say. And I was like, let's chill out on that.
He's fine.
He swerves
the chop. Soraya can wrestle like she wrestled. He's fucking fine. You know,
he swerves a really good chop. He hits a nice little jab to the chin that I got, thought got a nice little pop. Brian Cage is countering every comeback attempt. This is a slow pace, but Ricky finally lands a big comeback attempt DDT, and the crowd is instantly piped up. They're ready to roll. A Weapon X was countered by Ricky ended up hitting a really nice super kick by Cage. The spear gets a two. Cage hits a discus lariat for a believable two. I write believable two because I could have believed that he got pinned here. The way it was hit and with the counter that it was done.
Yeah, I did have it written in my notes that all of the near falls in this match were really good.
Ricky then hits a beauty, like a really nice destroyer combo. And the Rochambeau gets the dub. And we got Starks and Paige this dynamite. What did you think of this one?
It's really, really fun match. Two really solidly good wrestlers getting in there, having a really fun match. Honestly, like that, it was a little bit of a Team Taz like battle too, which I always love to see because Team Taz is one of our. It's funny, like there was all these factions when we first started watching, and like Team Taz was literally the only one that we were into. It's kind of funny, and it was the least popular faction. It was the greatest thing ever for our podcast
the
for a
whole
while.
Dante, Seidel, Leo Rush thing.
They drew us in, man. It was this is so good.
We were all in.
Dude, imagine, oh god, Leo Rush. What a footnote in AEW. Yeah, fuck. Imagine
that one
losing
still
kind of
hurts, man. That one still kind of hurts.
Not as bad as fucking Gresham, though. God damn. Gresham stung because that would have been the future of Ring of Honor. I'm sorry. That would have been your fucking 2-year champion in Ring of Honor right there. You know, like.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it because it's true. But
we jump into the Eddie Kingston Dream match. This is our final match on 0 Hour. It got the time it deserved.
Wait. Before we move on, there was something else we got to say. Buddy, we had some flying meat in that previous match. There was some meat in motion. I just had to say that, okay?
Some meat in motion.
Dude, that's what they were saying. I do that pop me on commentary. I was like, come on.
That's pretty good. The Eddie Kingston Dream match, man, right? The promo before it, the passion was real. He had some tears in his eyes before the match even starts. Well, in the backstage promo, there's some loud Eddie chants. This kind of the way we get rolling here, there's a feeling out process, which would you kind of describe to me? I mean, like you're like, you were kind of saying this feels like an All Japan match. Like, that's what Eddie wants to do here with him.
I've literally, guys, you don't understand. I've literally sat for like hours just kind of going through the archive of old All Japan matches. Like, I haven't seen all of them, probably not even a good amount of them. But I when I tell you that I've never watched pro wrestling like that before, I'm not kidding. Like, and I feel like Charlie, I don't know, you've seen it. I've sent you like 3 or 4 of those matches that I've watched.
Oh, yeah.
And tell me, Charlie, we watched a couple of Drew Nakayama matches in that mix that I sent you. I couldn't tell a difference between the kid that was wrestling Kenta Kobashi that I sent you from 97 and this guy. What was the difference?
Yeah. No,
it was the same kind of match. It was insane. And it was even crazier because, as they pointed out throughout this match, Charlie, Eddie wrestles a lot like Kenta Kobashi did. And
what an honor for Eddie.
I mean, so this was kind of like a bit of a match they would have had, you know? I mean, that was the match that I sent you, by the way. I don't know if you remember. It was Kobashi versus Akiyama. And, man, I don't know. There's something that spoke to me about this match. There was this methodical grind down that Jun Nakayama was doing where he was just keeping the pace slow and just grinding him down with that hard offense, the hard strikes, the heavy sort of throwing moves. And Charlie, it was just like those All Japan matches. What is the one thing that is key in every one of those matches is that it starts off a little slow. It builds up slowly over time. We get some chain wrestling. We get some holds. After all that's finally exhausted and we have a little bit of a worked in, you know, a worked spot, sort of like the neck, the head, whatever they're going to target in that case, in the case like Kobashi, that's what he would usually do because of because of the lariat. And then as soon as shit hits the fan, it hits the fan hard and there's head drops and there's suplexes and there's all kinds of different crazy finishing type moves. And I like that Akiyama never successfully hit that flying knee, I don't believe. I like that. It was like Eddie scouted it and prevented it from happening because he knew it was the only
knee I could think of was a stiff knee to the chest while Eddie was on his knees.
Yeah, that I don't know if that counts. Yeah. It might. It's close enough. I mean, it's kind of like Kobashi's lariat. Like, he doesn't have to hit a full burning lariat every time for everyone to be like, oh, lariat. You know, like, sometimes it's just a lariat, you know? But it's might as well be the finish. But anyway, my point is, this match was incredible. Like you said, there was that incredible, like, not to use the same word twice, knee from Akiyama where he was running, where he was seated.
Yep.
And that just was brutal looking. Eddie hit a Northern Lights bomb, which is just one of my favorite spots. Oh my God. And it's a hard spot to do, I think, as well, especially with two big meat men like that.
But there was a DDT on the apron from June that I thought was really beautiful.
Yep. Absolutely.
He also had a curb stomp.
We had a good
amount of curb stomps tonight.
Got
that
a little
was
bit
a
of
really
Yonkers
good
strong style in there, which is my favorite, probably my favorite call tonight. Yeah, man, we had some machine gun chops. Like I said, lots of head drops, and that's a key part of that All Japan style. You may not like it; it may be nasty and brutal.
Ground
and
beef chest.
Oh, just this was my. If there was going to be a match in the pre-show that was built for me, man, this was it. And
our smorgasbord of professional wrestling, Kenny likes to call it.
Exactly. This was the big meat slap fest, as we like to call it.
Eddie ends up he ends up winning with his elbow.
That Urikin.
That's a very emotional win.
Back fist, yeah.
There's a handshake. There's a hug after. I mean, this is just some beautiful stuff.
Seeing Eddie in like, I mean, he was in tears. I don't want to. Not that fucking toxic masculinity is really a thing that I want to support anyway, but like not to be like, oh, he's crying. Like he's not crying because it was fucking. He was crying because this is probably to him, it's the greatest moment of his life. You know, like,
wrestling, I mean,
this
hero
is something he's been working for his entire career. I believe it was a Hase versus Akiyama match that made him want to become a professional wrestler. I mean,
when he grabbed the mic after, it was pretty funny too. He's putting over the match and he's talking about the show we got coming up, talking about that piece of shit MJF. And
I know, dude, look at Eddie. Eddie talked for 2 seconds about himself. And then immediately started selling the show. What a fucking dude.
That's the guy you want in your company. Right? I mean, that's the guy you want in your company. So, really good stuff. It's time, man. Let's jump in. Let's jump into the official card of Full Gear. And we kick us off with Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy Jack Perry in a steel cage match.
Hey, man. Yeah, I was about to say you have to. I was going to say, if you don't play it, we're canceled.
We're all failures if we don't. So I'll run us through this match real quick, and then we'll kind of give some thoughts on it. So the video board right away with Luchasaurus' entrance, I thought that to me is when I noticed it. I was like, wait a minute. This thing's actually like kind of nuts. Luchasaurus, he really took some heavy offense early. Jack got bloody fast.
Mm-hmm.
He was just getting ramshackled into the cage. He's sporting the crimson mask. Christian ends up stealing the keys. That's fucking that son of a bitch. Security saves the day.
Christian is a fucking genius. Sorry, I had to stop you there.
He is, dude.
He's a genius when it comes to coming up. But no one has ever thought of that spot. I'm going to steal the
key
while he's not looking.
Low-key is
like, I've heard them. I've seen him threaten the ref and get the key. I've seen a ref get knocked out and then get the key. I've seen the key just kind of be in a place where the refs aren't in control of it. You know what I mean? That is new, and I liked it.
I did, too. Security ends up saving the day here. There's a fight outside the cage. Luch is getting the table. He still has control. I mean, he's dominating, honestly. It's a slower pace here, but it's a deadly pace. That's kind of the way I felt. Jack is kicking the dino head into the cage. The chair to the head gets really close to. Choke slam onto the chair gets a really big pop. Jack's trying to put Luchasaurus down, but he's so powerful. You were my best friend. He gets headbutt. Stay down. You're done, Luchasaurus says. And then my favorite moment, man. Jack wipes his face with blood and just bitch slaps Luchasaurus.
Dude.
There's a pile driver from Jack for a two count. By this point, the crowd is really into it. So you're having your slow burn, right? It was that offensive deadly match. And when you get to this moment, if the crowd gives the reaction you want, you've won. You did your job, and the booking was right. A tombstone gets a two from Luchasaurus. This is awesome, Chance. Jack lands a brutal chair shot. Jack climbs to the top of the cage while Luchasaurus is on the elbow. He says a prayer, drops an elbow from the fucking roof, puts him in the snare trap, and Luchasaurus taps out. What'd you think about the winner here, and what'd you think about the match? I know following our Eddie and Jun Akiyama, I like the pace of this one, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree 1,000%. Fuck that table for not breaking right. But anyway, it was fine. But when they showed the replay, it like totally takes like a half second after he lands on.
Yeah.
It's like, whatever. Can't use the spot replay, but fucking that happens to AEW so frequently. Maybe they need to get new tables. Like, don't get anything that's going to hurt anybody, but like, Jesus Christ. Maybe that's what happened with that Juliet Hart one, was that was a bad table. But I really enjoyed this match. I noticed, I don't know if it's something I've been noticing lately or not. I can't remember, but it looks like Jungle Boy's chest is getting a little bigger, Charlie. Maybe he's starting to finally fill out that figure a little bit so he can be a big meat man that's slapping meat along with the other big meat slapping men of the company. Yeah, yeah, there's some pretty crazy athletic spots from him. Like you mentioned, he got yeeted into the steel a lot. He got jackknife power bombed into the steel and almost got pinned between the steel and the ring. I don't know what happened there, but
that was cool.
The only thing that was a little silly was Jungle Boy's family seeing him bloodied and beaten and just cheering it on. But I mean, hey, they've been smartened up, so you can't do anything about that, you know? A really good match to open the show. And like you said, the pace was perfect because we just had that like super raw motion from Eddie and we needed a little bit of a calm down. And I think that was planned perfectly and maybe even done. Like I imagine if there were some things that were certain on the card, that would have been probably one of them just because it makes sense from an energy standpoint. Because I mean, the match that we went into next needed to have a bit of a cool down from the Akiyama Eddie thing to, in order to be able to have its full glory, Charlie.
1,000%. So, yeah, I'm with you, man. I really like this. I like the result, too. I think Jack getting the win here is a good result. And if they're going to, you know, sell him as their pillar and he's one of the next big stars, well, you got to win this feud and we got to win the Christian feud. And then maybe there's a world where, you know, 8 months from now, it's him and MJF.
Charlie, did every single pillar win on this show?
Who are the pillars? It's MJF, Darby Allin, Jack Perry, Sammy Guevara. So, nope, Sammy didn't win.
So, Sammy's the only pillar. Damn, fucking...
Everyone got featured, though.
Chop liver.
Chop liver. Death Triangle versus the Elite. The AEW Trios Championship. I was all in on this match. The Death Triangle entrance, I'm going to say it again. Favorite entrance right now. It has been, when they're a trio, I love this fucking entrance so much. Penta's the Joker. So, sorry, Swerve, he stole your gimmick.
Rip.
The Elite entrance is being held. We're like, all right, what's going on? They're doing the TikTok thing. Carry on, flashes twice, and you and I both know where this is going.
Mm-hmm.
Carry on, Wayward Son, the theme song. Shout out Kansas. This is I want to say, it's some anniversary of the song, too.
Okay, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, which is pretty neat. The crowd is unbelievably hype here. Welcome back, Chance. So, yeah, I'll run through some of this match, and then we'll kind of dive in it after. Kenny versus Pac. As they're opening up the show here, and just right away, just Elite chain wrestling. I missed Kenny, and I felt that right away. I'm like, thank God this fucker's back. Fuck CM Punk chants. These were loud. Colt Cabana chants. Ray and Nick have their turn now. Some really fun counters.
One of the best calls of the night on commentary, referring to Pac's new method of winning as Pac's way of the hammer. That needs to be on a fucking t-shirt.
The way of the hammer. The way of the hammer. What is dead may never die.
Literally, like, seriously. I forget who said that, but God,
that was good. Young Bucks and Lucha Bros have a pump kick exchange, and this is they're back, man. Some AEW chants. We like seeing that. Young Bucks and Kenny were then hitting all the goodies. Nick was drinking from the fans.
I was going to say, Matt took a little sippy.
Yeah. Kenny getting destroyed by Death Triangle.
He was like, are you sure? Because I think he didn't know if the dude wanted to drink after him because they had COVID and all that.
Yeah. He's
like, are you sure? All right.
Hey, Pac is bleeding from his nose at this point. Matt's going nuts with I like the Northern Lights suplex.
Mm-hmm.
Nick getting some really insane high rope combos on the Lucha Brothers. Kenny and Pac, round two. Pac sold the fuck out of a kick. Kenny Snapdragons are just going in. That's a work of art. Kenny Snapdragons, genuinely.
Oh, yeah.
Matt is planting Ray with a DDT on the apron. Nick hits, I want to say it's a Hurricanrana. I didn't catch what it was. Maybe it's something off the top rope outside. He literally catches Penta on the top rope. Hurricanranas him outside. They knock everybody out. Pac and Kenny, round three. These motherfuckers are just going at it all match. Some really good offense this time by Pac. A triple tombstone is done on the Elite. There's a really good combo into a DDT followed by Destroyers. Pac hits the black arrow on Kenny into the submission. Ray killed Kenny with a kick to the face. He then gets tossed the hammer. Now, the hammer's been something we've been following for the past couple weeks. Pac's been using it to cheat. Phoenix doesn't want to cheat. V-trigger from Kenny to Ray. I'm like, oh, shit. Because if you guys didn't catch the prediction show, I was pretty passionate about it. I don't think the Young Bucks and the Elite should win this.
Yeah, I was saying that back before they even finished the investigation, because I figured that's the way they were going to go.
You can't have them walk back and win the titles day one. You can't do it. Ray ends up kicking out from that. Fight Forever chant. That's the chant you want, right? Penta goes to Sling Blade City. Triple super kick party to another two count. Pac defends. Pac wants to use the hammer. Some more top rope goodies. The hammer gets tossed to Ray. He knows if he doesn't do this now, all else fails, he's going to lose the title. His hand was forced. He had to turn to the dark side. He used the hammer on Kenny. They end up pinning Kenny. Death Triangle retains. There's going to be a best of seven series. Garrett, the Elite are back. What'd you think of this? And I mean, there's more spots in there I missed, but this was literally just balls to the wall, insane trios action. The trios title, the rank of matches, if you're counting the tournament, have been fucking insane.
Yeah. Which is the entire argument I had for why they should make them in the first place and why that should have been before the TBS and the All-Atlantic Championships. But that all aside, like you kind of pointed out, they never really missed a step in this match. I think there's a 1,000% chance that there's going to be like a Super Mario fucking Hammer Bros joke made out of this somehow. Like,
nice.
Because, you know, there's enemies in Super Mario called Hammer Brothers. Anyway, they're Lucha Bros. Anyway. So maybe that's me just assuming that they'll stoop to that level of comedy, because that's very Young Bucks. But, no, I'm just kidding. That just popped into my head. Anyway, but I mean, I'm just thinking. I was like, Hammer Bros? Hammer Lucha Bros? Oh, anyway. Math. But anyway, I don't know. Really good match. I don't think anybody expected that this match was not going to hang exactly and bang with the best of them. The problem is, this match should have been booked like 3 weeks ago or something. And I know people are going to be like, but blah, blah, blah. What about this with CM Punk? And what if there was a reason why they couldn't be on the show? There was no reason. They've been back at TV for like, what, 4 or 5 weeks now? Like, they could have done this. Why they should? And you could be like, well, they did the sort of, they didn't really sell it on it being Elite versus Death Triangle, which they should have. 1,000%. I don't think anybody can deny that. I think that's the biggest misstep with this whole thing, is that they didn't build it up over like multiple weeks. Because that could have been way bigger. I'm sorry. It just could have.
Could have been, but you know what? Hey, the match definitely, I feel like it delivered.
Oh, it had for to. For sure. Though, right? It definitely delivered. I don't think the match was affected by this. I think the pay-per-view was. I think this hurt the pay-per-view overall. That maybe people would have watched it. I'm not saying that you would have got. I'm saying that you can look at the trios matches, main events, numbers, and say, well, blah, 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 blah. Okay, well, whatever. But when we're talking about AEW pay-per-views, it's a whole different ballpark, because people will watch Kenny Omega on pay-per-view. That's just a fact.
Oh, yeah. 100% so. Agreed. All right, so let's jump into our third match. Tough to follow that match. So who follows it? TBS Championship match. Jade Cargill versus Nyla Rose. Nyla came out. She had a nice big entrance, getting out of a car and shit. She lays out Hogan immediately. Jade, I didn't catch what she was wearing, but it looked really cool.
They said it was Thundercats inspired.
Thundercats. Okay, perfect. Yep, see, I didn't catch what it was, so perfect. So Jade's wearing Thundercats, so that's become her pay-per-view thing. She was Jade from Mortal Kombat, she was She-Hulk, and now Thundercats, and that's really cool. A little bit of a pay-per-view tradition for her at this point.
Yeah, now. Absolutely. It's not uncommon. Penta does the Joker and like Samurai and stuff like that. Like, I like it when wrestlers...
Ricochet, get, when he was busting out different gear every pay-per-view.
Ricochet's gear was incredible for a while.
It really was. Jade's landing some forearms. She's in control, kind of tossing around Nyla. A really nice pump kick over the barricade that I thought was really well sold by Nyla, too. Nyla ends up getting in some offense, and right where's I here's where I kind of took note. Jade's starting to sell a bit. Nyla gets a nice little splash, followed by a cannonball. Jade goes to the top rope. Nyla counters with a boot. Jade's selling, at this point, I feel like, almost more than she has ever. Like, she's really selling it. She's kind of getting her ass beat.
It's kind of hard to do this match with Nyla. I mean, because you put them next to each other, and Nyla's like the only person that can even remotely closely stand close, like in proximity to Jade, not look small. You know, like
yep. So it's like when you know you got your other big quote giant wrestlers in matches, they don't really sell too often, but they will against another bigger opponent. And obviously, Nyla's been the women's world champion before, so she's no easy foe here. Jade ends up landing a beast bomb in the comeback. Jaded is countered to a roll-up. Nyla lands a Jaded. It's a really deep two count. I don't know if Jade's had that count before. Like, this is how dominant she's been. I'm trying to... She doesn't really get two counts on
her. But she has when she accidentally has almost been pinned twice. But
yeah, so, you know, like, these really deep two counts on her own finisher. It's like, okay. So, Vicky is really loud at this point. Kara Hogan just tells her to shut up. That kind of pops.
Literally.
Nyla goes to the top rope. Her senton gets countered into a pump kick. Jaded, 42-0. And while Nyla, the pin's happening, Vicky is screaming, no! Vicky wearing the same shirt that Rhea Ripley was wearing. So that's cool. That made me happy. And that's really neat stuff. So, yeah, Jade and Nyla, as expected, this was the shortest match on the show. It was 8 minutes, but... It wasn't just a one way domination street for once, which is kind of nice. So, we're moving past this, and Jade is 42-0. So,
I'm sure we'll see her at Winter's Cup. Reign just continues forever. And shout out to Aubrey with a cool looking haircut.
By the way, I totally missed Aubrey getting clocked on Rampage from Athena.
You just missed it completely? Wow!
I totally missed that. I didn't even talk about it yesterday. I saw the
clip
today.
You know what else we didn't? You know what else we forgot to do? Did we even predict who was going to win the TNT championship?
I don't know, but I would have said Powerhouse Hobbs. I would have been wrong.
I would have probably said, if I had to guess, I would have probably said Joe, because that was just in my head. But we might have predicted it. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe.
I know I'm saying that now, having Joe have already won, and it sounds really stupid, but I would have said Joe because of that thing that I heard from Alvarez's podcast. So...
But yeah, so, you know, this match was what it was, right? It was sandwiched in between the Trios Championship and then the four-way ROH World Championship. Okay, Chris Jericho, Claudio, Danielson, Guevara, ROH World title, Sammy getting some loud boos. Ian's on commentary. We like our boy Ian.
Yep.
Immediately, this kind of dives into a 1v1 situation on two different sides. Jericho and Danielson, and then Guevara and Claudio. Jericho and Danielson are really landing some heavy chops. Claudio with the beautiful uppercuts to Jericho. The BCC is taking control here. They enter a long handshake. It's time for the boys to start beating the shit out of each other. Claudio and Danielson. I wrote chain wrestling extravaganza.
That's it's a really I wrote it as really cool chain wrestling sequence between the two of them, and they actually followed that up after they had just hit a really nice chain of uppercuts on each other.
It's nice little stuff. So they end up getting they're both locking Jericho in the Boston Crab. Guevara breaks it up with a double cutter, pop and lock Sammy. Someone coined it on commentary. The JAS is entertainers. Ian is just offended at this point. Sammy is putting on some great offense on Danielson, I thought. And then Guevara gets hit with the lion salt, kind of like a friendly fire. You know, he wasn't intended to be the result there. It was supposed to be Danielson hit.
Mm-hmm.
And then
let's be real, Jericho intended to hit him there.
Oh yeah. So Guevara then stops the count of Jericho trying to pin Danielson, and now he's tossing fists with Jericho. And I actually really liked the stuff between here of Jericho and Sammy. Jericho won't stop the crab on Danielson. Sammy hits the GTH on Jericho, which actually got a really good reaction from the crowd.
Yeah, I thought I'm not going to lie to you. When he hit that and then he hit the, what is it?
He hit a shooting star. Yep.
I was like, one, two, holy shit. Like,
really good deep two count.
There was and there was one other instance with Danielson. I forget what he did. Maybe it was when he hit that Busaiko knee on Claudio. A couple of really close near falls that I thought for sure were going to win the match. Like,
So after that, Sammy Guevara tries to start killing Bryan Danielson, and that's a bad idea. Danielson slaps the piss out of Sammy Guevara. He then hits the knee on Claudio for the two count that you're talking about. Claudio and Danielson really enter some really cool combos. A lariat gets a nice two. Sammy hits a Spanish fly off the top rope. Danielson locks in the lapel. Claudio hits a neutralizer on the floor on Danielson. Claudio hits an uppercut on Sammy, which is just a fucking beauty shot. Claudio puts Sammy in the swing. Judas effect on Claudio, and Jericho is still champed. This was just, honestly, action-packed from the jump. I thought Sammy looked great. I ended up tweeting that out. I was like, Sammy's been in a lot of good matches this year, and it all started off with the match against Cody in January.
Yep.
All right. Silently, fucking really good year out of him.
And absolutely. I don't think even silently. I think it's been known. I think how much
heat he gets. A lot of people just kind of brushed it off once that that feud with Scorpio and I think a lot of people just kind of forgot.
Was kind of a bit of a fucked feud. So
oh no, the feud was awful, and it's just.
I mean, we haven't seen Scorpio Sky since, and it's been like 6 months.
Yeah, no, he got hurt. So
oh, did he get injured? Yes. I forgot. Okay,
yeah. So
I didn't know that.
What did you think of this ROH four-way for the world title?
Tell you how much I enjoyed it, Charlie. That spot you just reminded me of where Sammy Guevara got obliterated. Charlie, there's only one thing that you can say to that, and we're getting a retroactive award here. Because I didn't think about it in the moment, but you know what? That fuck the rules. I make them up as I go along. So we can do this on pay-per-views now, too. So
absolutely.
I don't know why I never thought I could. I just didn't think about it, and we haven't had a pay-per-view since I started doing this. So here we go. So Claudio Castagnoli and also Sammy Guevara getting a little bit of a Simmons Award. So, yeah.
Yeah.
It was going to happen eventually, especially with fucking Claudio. Goddamn.
And I think we'll actually, we'll touch on that in a second because we know who Jericho's facing next, which will be fun stuff, too. So, all right. It's time for the return match. Saraya, Britt Baker.
Okay. This is where it's going to get interesting because I actually don't know how to feel about this match, Charlie.
Yeah, so it's not long, so I'll just run through this real quick.
Go ahead, just go through it, and then we can talk about it.
So right away, they're having a stare-off, and I wrote, the match feels big. It actually felt like a big match because of the energy of the crowd, since it's her return, and, you know, Britt's kind of, she is kind of our, I don't know what's the term here, she's kind of our face of our women's division.
The only star that's allowed to exist.
And there's really loud welcome back chants. They had to go through a feeling out process. Saraya starts selling the neck pretty quick. Britt's acting very cocky. I thought Britt hit a really nice twisting neck breaker on the floor. So at the beginning of this is kind of her having control. She's showboating. She's like, really? This is who you brought me? Saraya ends up hitting a nice diving crossbody onto the floor. And the match is starting to get some length to it at this point, it felt like. Because we're kind of going a little bit back and forth. Saraya's finally getting some moves. Britt lands a really nice air raid crash. She hits a nice curb stomp for a two count. And then Rampage, we don't know what the move's going to be named. They didn't even name it. Saraya hits her Rampage, which was her finisher in WWE. Some nice counters happen. There's a crucifix roll up into a ripcord lariat into a nice knee by Saraya. She hits the Shining Wizard. The ripcord elbow by Britt lands nicely. There's a second curb stomp. She kicks out. And then Saraya wins with the Rampage. So, yeah, I mean,
this is Rampage, baby.
Rampage, baby. We're going to call it the Rampage until we know what it is. The match ended up going 12 and a half minutes. I kept saying in the predictions, I don't know if it's going to be 6 minutes or 23. It landed at 12. It sounds about right. So, yeah, I mean, I'll just say real quick, I thought it served its purpose. I think it looked fine for her comeback match. I mean, I figured Saraya would win, and I don't think Britt looked bad in the process. So, you know, I this is our second women's match of the night, and it wasn't for the world title. So we had three women's matches tonight. That's a good step in the right direction that we've been talking about.
Yes.
And By the way, I can't wait till we have Layla Hirsch back also.
I know, right? Because that's going to be such a fun... Like, I imagine that's the person who they were probably going to do that with. Because she was getting on TV regularly. She had something going on backstage where they were like, yes, this is who we want.
Imagine that she has that taking on...
She's like an Olympic athlete, right? Like,
yeah, and imagine her taking on this new Athena.
That would be incredible, dude. Because that was the same kind of story we were getting from her, was that aggressive side coming out of her. So imagine the two of them colliding. My God.
Blood good shit. So, what did you think of this one, Saraya and Britt Baker? You were kind of, you had some thoughts on it.
I don't know if it was just the way that I had, like, the perception I had going into this match maybe was broken, because I just assumed that she wasn't going to be able to do what she should be able to do.
No, that's completely fair.
But I got to be honest with you, man. It made me feel like she's made of glass right now.
Because the way she was selling, you think?
I hope it was that.
I think it was. I totally could be wrong here. I think they were purposely selling the neck that quick.
I will give you that they did hit just about every piece of offense on her neck that they possibly could, but I don't know if that was the plan.
That, and I'm sure the curb stomps didn't actually really hurt her.
I don't think they did either. Did look like they hit her right in the fucking spine, though.
Yeah.
That was like nuts, but... She was able to hit some offense, which I thought was good. Not as much as I would have liked.
The one I liked was the diving crossbody onto the floor. To me, you're not doing that unless you're feeling some confidence in yourself, because you're
really landing straight on the ground. Some Giga Brain CM Punk shit. Like, remember how CM Punk was like purposefully looking like he was not 100% when he first came back for like the first several months, and then he hit this match. I forget which match it was, but he hit one match, and all of a sudden CM Punk was back. I really hope it's that.
Kenny working his way back off the injury slowly but surely, finally hitting the one-winged angel.
But maybe a little more drawn out than that, because that was literally 1 week.
Yeah, it was like two or three bad. Yeah, it wasn't much.
Yeah. But, I'm really worried for Saraya, man. I really am, because I don't know. I remember saying to you, there's no reason to have this match unless you can have the match everyone wants, and they couldn't. So I don't know what this... I'm not saying that we shouldn't have this match. I'm saying that this match, because of how big it is, deserved a 20-minute bloodbath.
Okay. That's fair.
But we couldn't get that. So I don't know.
I will say...
I'm mixed about it.
And that's totally fair. In my head, I'm kind of keeping an idea. I don't think this is going to be the last time. I imagine they're going to run this back at Winter is Coming. And then imagine they're going to run it back again in January at one of those big shows. And one of those that's going to close the show.
I mean, I can tell you what show it's going to close. The third match is going to close the UK show.
Is that in January? I'd have to double check. But
if it's not, it should be. I keep saying that. Why would you not go to the UK immediately? Can you imagine your first big show of the year being in the UK?
Well, even still, I mean, those West Coast crowds are nuts. So,
eh.
Yeah, that was a 12.5-minute match. So we jump into Wardlow versus Hobbs versus Joe. I'm gonna actually let you take the lead on this one. So we had our TNT title match.
Yeah. So Wardlow looked really great. And it was our classic big meat slap fest for the TNT title here. I do honestly think that this match took quite a while to get going.
For a sub-10-minute match, especially.
I don't know what happened here. Maybe all three guys just didn't want to be working with each other. That's possible. But it was fine for what it was. There was a really nice shoulder tackle into a barricade, into the barricade in the chair that Joe took at one point. I don't have much written about this match, Charlie, because I wasn't really that into it.
I mean, yeah, so I'm with you. It took a little bit to get going. I thought Hobbs. Early on, he had a really nice delayed vertical suplex on Wardlow that I thought really stuck out.
Yep.
I mean, but then the whole story here was Wardlow kind of going beast mode, right? He took control. He had a really nice senton. He had a nice spine buster on Joe.
Dude, that senton he managed to somehow hit on both of their fucking shoulders with his individual shoulders. I will never know how he fucking did that.
It was a beauty. Taz had a great line. War Joe is dead. Thank you, Taz. We didn't know that. But no, Wardlow and Hobbs are really just trying to overpower each other. Led to some power bombs. Joe ends up cracking Wardlow over the head with his title. He locks in the submission, and it's it. I mean, there wasn't really much chemistry here, per se. Mm-hmm. The match was kind of just big men doing big men things. I see what they went for. I just don't know if it delivered the way they wanted to. But that being said, Samoa Joe's the new champion.
Yes. Yeah, I mean,
you're not making that fucking decision unless you mean it. And holy shit, Wardlow, the TNT title reign of Wardlow has come to an end. So, as we like to do with this, let's dive into his reign real quick, because that's something we like to do on our show, even though this is a pay-per-view episode.
Mm-hmm.
We got to dive into their title reign. So Wardlow, he wins this title reign. He won it off of Scorpio Sky, and he won it just on a dynamite in a street fight. He was champion for 136 days. That he ranks out as the fifth ranked AEW TNT champion behind Sammy Guevara at 138 days, but Sammy had three different reigns. So this is the third longest reign. Darby Allin at 186, Miro at 140, Wardlow at 136. So they finally kind of did what we were hoping they would do when they went to Wardlow.
Oh, God, Miro. Where the fuck is he?
You can say that again. But this was, you know, the title reign had its length, right? But there was some problems with this title reign. During the pay-per-view, during the big Grand Slams, Wardlow was thrown in one-off tag matches just to be featured. He wasn't in TNT title feuds, per se. Right? I mean,
yeah, I mean, that's fair.
That was the whole thing.
I don't think we ever really got a storyline with Wardlow as champion.
And if we did, they were very, very brief. And this one was one of the longer ones. It was about 4 weeks with Hobbs that he's been feuding with.
We got Sanjay and Lethal versus him for a little while, and that was a story.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm about to go through the guys he defended against. But for what it's worth, going into this feud, I thought this feud with Hobbs, maybe we can start a new, you know, start a new thing with Wardlow here. If he was to retain, will we start booking some longer feuds? Like, hopefully, like they're doing with Jade now, like they did with Nyla. Let's not go from Jade to now 2 weeks she defends it from someone else, 2 weeks later from that someone else, 2 weeks later from that. Oh, it's the pay-per-view. We don't have a feud again, but we need to get her on. Wardlow, instead of what they've done is, oh, now you're going to team with FTR. Oh, now you're going to team with Warjo. Oh, you know what? The Pinnacle's back. This, that. And his title reign, these were his matches, all right? He wins it off Scorpio Sky at Dynamite 144. Dynamite 145, it's Fyter Fest. He defends against Orange Cassidy.
Banger.
Hands down, my favorite title defense of his, and it's not even close. That was
like the second match of the Orange Cassidy run that led him to the All-Atlantic title, which I think is crazy.
And when that match was happening, I remember you and I thinking, like, what are we in for with this title reign? This is going to be something. This could be really good. Mm-hmm. This is week one. This is what we're getting.
Yep.
We start the Jay Lethal feud. Again, I'm still feeling pretty high about this. Like,
mm-hmm. Even okay. Through the Jay Lethal feud, I think we would both say
we're going against one of our guys. Yeah. Battle of the Belts 3. He defeats Jay Lethal in 7.5 minutes.
That was probably when Sanjay was the most entertaining on TV. I will give the feud that. That was probably when he was the most entertaining recently, was that feud. So I'll give a little bit of credit. I just feel like this, I'm with you, man. This title reign just didn't hit for me.
3 weeks later, we defend in 1.5 minutes against Ryan Nemeth at Rampage 56.
Whatever, I guess.
2 weeks later, we defend against Tony Nese at Dynamite 153 in 1:24. 6 weeks later, we defend against Brian Cage in a 10-minute match at Dynamite 157. That was the anniversary show. The match was okay. I remember saying, this feels like our first
match at the time.
This feels like our first legit title match in a couple months, because it was. At that point, he hadn't faced Jay Lethal in 2 months. So we were like, okay, maybe we're getting back on track here. The Matt Taven match, neither of us were like really gloating about that one. That was 9 minutes. That was Rampage 65. So that was 3 weeks after that. Mm-hmm. And then he faces 2 weeks after that, He takes
that math was so brutal, the kingdom haven't been seen since.
Yeah. So that kind of tells you all you need to know. He beats Ari Daivari in a minute 48 in a just pathetic match. So Orange Cassidy, Jay Lethal, Ryan Nemeth, Tony Nese, Brian Cage, Matt Taven, Ari Daivari. Favorite match? Orange Cassidy?
Probably. I mean, yeah, I would say.
That was a really good one. Orange Cassidy, his return's been a fucking astounding success. So that's it for Wardlow, man. 136 days. Where does he go from here? Maybe he just immediately gets it back, and that's how we... You could buy me on that, too. So let's start something new. But Samoa Joe...
So what's the point of him losing it, then? I guess would be my point. Like, does that really get that much more heat on Joe than him betraying him in general?
The shock factor? I don't know. But this is... Unfortunately for him, for Wardlow, it's Joe winning the title. I don't think Joe's just going to drop this thing.
I don't think so either. I mean, if you thought that was the case, you'd have thought he would have probably lost the other championship at this point. So
I think Tony felt like, you know what?
And that might have been the plan, by the way. I think there was genuinely a time when Tony thought Satnam Singh's going to be ready in time for me to have Joe face him, and they're going to have a match, and that was going to be on one of the Ring of Honor cards this year, and Satnam Singh was going to become Ring of Honor television champion. I think that was a legit thought in Tony Khan's head that he realized was not going to happen three days later, not even 3 months, like 3 days later. He was like, oh, shit. What do I
and
do with the title?
You know
now?
What? And I'm thinking maybe something might have happened here where... Someone might have pitched this to him. His brain might have figured it out. He's got a legit blue chipper, a legit blue chip prospect in Samoa Joe. Joe's 43 years old. He doesn't have another fucking 5-10 years of this. Him now. He's a fucking blue chipper. Get a title reign on him. Cause you know what? That fucking promo on Wednesday was absolutely incredible. And if he made the decision then, maybe if he made the decision then, like, you know what? I'm just going to do it. I'm putting this thing on Joe. He can be my ROH TV champion. He can be my TNT title champion. He deserves this title. And if that promo on Wednesday was that good, it convinced him, maybe, like, you know what? Maybe it awoke something in his mind. I need to fucking do this. I'm down with it. Fuck it. Send it in. Jericho has a backstage interview. He said there's no dissension with Sammy. Orange Cassidy comes along. He says, I got a buddy. Tomohiro Ishii and Chris Jericho are going to take on for the ROH title this Wednesday. The Bulldog, right? OC then looks at Jake Hager, asks, you like this title? Hager goes, yeah. Like, I like this hat. Orange Cassidy agrees. Nice hat. Hager screams, damn right! It's a nice hat. Hager was a little goofy here. I kind of like this side of him.
Dude, I love this new character that Hager's coming up with, where he's kind of like the goofy. He's like the big heater, but he's kind of goofy. They give him a little more personality. I like the idea. And I imagine that's how Hager actually is. He seems like a good dude, you know? Like,
he does. He does. So
he seems like the kind of dude you'd hang out and watch some wrestling with, you know?
Some wrestling with.
And he'd be into it. He'd be calling all the spots. He'd be like, oh my God, look at how good that was. And you'd be like, yeah, dude, come on, Jake, come on. You can do that, you know, and some shit like that. You know, like, yeah, it'd be good. Be good. Has some coffee, because I don't think I don't imagine. He doesn't seem like the kind of guy that drinks, you know what I mean? Like,
gets fucked up on the liquor.
Maybe he does. Maybe he's a wild man. You never know.
So
he's got that beard.
Darby Allin and Sting, they go to take on Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal. When are we going to learn?
Not the most anticipated match of the show.
No, not the most anticipated match, but Sting is fucking, he's 100% at these AEW pay-per-views. This motherfucker always delivers. Every match Sting's in, for some reason, always seems to be fun. Right,
I think it's because Sting knows. He knows. He has seen what happens when other wrestlers have come back at the age that he is at, and it just looks horrifically bad. He saw that Ric Flair match earlier this year. Not that they're the same age, but you get what I'm saying.
Like, yeah.
He saw what it can look like when it's bad. And all the moments that we're seeing from Sting, including the moment with Muda, including now this match with Jeff Jarrett, I think that they've figured out this formula with Sting. Maybe Sting's the one that figured it out, where you can figure out how to use these older wrestlers in a way that doesn't feel like, you don't have to be Billy Gunn, who's just a freak, you know? Like, whereas Sting, he can't really wrestle like that anymore, but man, and it shows sometimes, but man, when he spots out his stuff perfectly, does it ever work? And I think that's all you need to do. I think, honestly, WWE has gotten away with that with, and I'm just going to say, subpar wrestlers that can't make some of those spots themselves. You know what I mean? Like, with their ability to build up the crowd. Sometimes they'll give them a spot like that because it's in, you know, because it gets the crowd behind you. And if that's what they figured out, that they don't need to have Sting be the center of attention, which why everyone thinks that you need to be the center of attention when you're like the big star in these feuds, I will never know. But I think the spotlight in this match, Charlie, it was on Jay Lethal and Darby Allin.
100%.
More than anything.
Yeah, I was going to say, what did you think of this one?
Yeah, no, I was, I just started going there. So, yeah, I mean, so there was some TNA chants when Jarrett and Sting were across from each other in the ring, which I thought was pretty funny. That was good. Because that was a classic match you would see on TNT Weekly, man, for a while there. Not every week, but every now and then you'd get a Sting versus Jeff Jarrett match, and it was usually pretty good, so I can't complain, you know?
Okay.
Hey, man, I even said this to you while we were watching the show. I cannot deny how big of a star Jeff Jarrett is. I just can't. I can pretend that I don't like Jeff Jarrett because he doesn't fit on the show. But the truth is, it doesn't really – it's a smorgasbord, like you always say. So everything fits. I just don't like it. So I just have to start accepting that that's how it is. But Sting flew from the crowd, which was incredible. You know, oh, dude, the spot where Darby got caught and obliterated by Satnam. My God.
Yeah.
Just Satnam is like, and I keep saying this about Satnam every time. Satnam is so perfect to use in these certain situations. Like, I'll never need to see Satnam wrestle ever again. If he's just there to be on the outside and to catch people and to obliterate them on the outside, like, I think that works.
Catches that long ass coffin drop and just ragdolls the motherfucker on the stage. I mean, that was
good. Yeah, he grabs a fucking ladder, climbs up the ladder, lands like 20 feet below him, and he just catches him like, hey, bud.
He also had a really big pop when he planted Sting with a choke slam.
Hell yeah, dude.
Satnam can be used, man.
I just think he needs to learn a little bit more. He's getting there. He's really close, I think. I would imagine because they keep having him do more. So I think he's getting close. It's just he's not there yet, you know?
Darby
he looks
Allin,
like he moves pretty good, though, for that size.
He does, and Darby Allin went, you know, one step closer to the grave again, almost dying, as intended with the Darby Allin pay-per-view match. Fuck it, even Darby Allin dark match. Darby True. Hits a coffin drop on Jay for the victory. So, as we said yesterday, you never bet against Darby on a pay-per-view match. You just don't do it.
No.
So yeah, let's jump into Toni Storm, Jamie Hayter, AW. Interim women's world title. I think they both had a really good reaction. This was a fast start.
Yes.
Let's go Jamie Chance early. Some very solid chain wrestling to start us off.
Yep.
There's some ass slapping and some intimidation, which I don't mind. I'm not going to be upset about that. a hip attack kills Jamie. I mean, it sends her to the fucking outer realm. Yep. She's in the quantum realm right now. She's fighting Kang at this point. Tony, she's kind of running the show now. She's dominating. Jamie ends up countering, slams Tony into the barricade. Lots of time spent out of the ring here in the beginning. There's some chops going until Tony hits the ring post. Jamie again takes control, ragdolling Tony into the barricades, just back and forth, smacking her fucking head. There were some strong style hitting matches. Like, this was some strong style here.
Oh, absolutely.
Very good pace as well. Jamie with a just beauty of a snap suplex. She's in control for a while. A really nice forearm kind of spot there. And then some more ass slapping into a hip attack. Those fucking hip attacks are just ruthless.
Somehow they're getting more brutal every time. I don't know how that's possible at this point because they just are so insane. Like, is it one of those things you think, Tony, I called you Tony, Charlie, where fucking Toni Storm, like literally just says, just be ready for it. And she doesn't even tell them, like, cause there's no way that shit doesn't hurt. Right? Like,
come on, man. It's a nice soft surprise.
No, listen, bud. Listen, bud. I'm not going there yet. All right, okay. Bud.
So after that, there's a really nice DDT off the ropes from Tony. Hayter ends up countering into a really cool pin attempt.
You fucked up.
Some let's go Jamie Chance reign again. Rebel has arrived. Is it time for some shenanigans? Tony is busted open at this point. Some bloody wood time, you know. A Rebel clocks Tony with the title. Jamie hits the sliding lariat for a really nice two count. Rebel gets kicked out. Tony lands the haterade. Britt then clocks for a two count there. Britt clocks Tony with the title on top of the stomp. So she, Tony kind of fell outside of the ring, and Britt fucking curb stomped her onto the title. Throws her back in. Jamie hits a Storm Zero, and Tony kicks out again. I'm like, oh my god, they're going super fucking human. Haterade is avoided. She hits a German Storm Zero, and another kick out. This time it's by Jamie. Hater ends up landing the hate breaker, and another kick out at two. Tony gets hit in the turnbuckle after Britt's kind of unbuckling it, and Jamie lands the Haterade, and she is the new champion. What a match. Genuinely, what a fucking match. And what a pop. Dude. Jamie Hayter. They wasted no fucking time. She's the interim world champion. What did you think about this and the result, man? I mean, dude.
Just a really, really great match. I got to be honest with you. I did not see them changing the championship here just because of how great Tony Storm's title reign has been, which we'll get into in a second.
Been unreal.
But sometimes that's the right time to take the championship off of somebody is when there's such a tidal wave of momentum, you know? And now that has all been transferred directly onto Jamie Hayter, which will now make her possibly, and this is, I'm going to say it, Charlie, she might possibly surpass Britt Baker in the terms of the level of a heel women's champion. She may just do it because I got to be honest with you, man, that reaction, there's only a couple of people in the company that get reactions like that, period, let alone for winning a championship. Like,
yeah.
I mean, Jamie Hayter is now on that next level. She's been on that next level for a long time, but she finally has the strap to back it up now.
I can't believe we're sitting here with Jamie Hayter and MJF as our champions.
I know, dude. It's still hard to comprehend.
So cool, man.
Gotta get used to it because this Wednesday is going to be MJF opening up the show with a promo. You know it is.
So many good feuds we could jump into. I really hope Thunder Rosa is able to come back soon so we can figure this whole interim thing out.
You know what I think might actually happen now if they're smart? If they're smart, what they could do is they could come out and have either Tony Khan or Thunder Rosa come on the show at some point and be like, hey, I know we did this whole interim title thing, but we all know there's been a lot of nonsense associated with these interim titles. We're not getting rid of the interim title. What we're doing is now instead of it being you face the champion, whoever wins the interim title, and like let's say Tony Storm then drops it this many months later, right? I know this is all like storyline stuff you have to think about, but like I'm just thinking in my head, how could you justify not having that match between her and Tony? You know what I mean? I think you kind of have to, and maybe you make it just a number one contenders match and you just do that this one time, because I just don't know if this, I've been talking to you about this lately, man. I don't know about this interim title thing. It's starting to like cloud how you have to book things, because I feel like
I'll be straight up. I never thought
Thunder Rosa versus Jamie Hayter, but why do I care about that match? I care about the Thunder Rosa versus Tony Storm match because Tony Storm talked all kinds of shit as soon as Thunder Rosa was out the door. So I want to see where that goes. I don't have any desire to see Thunder Rosa come back and potentially just jack the title from Jamie Hayter. I'm sorry. That's the truth. Like, you know, like I don't have any desire to see that. So I think a number one contenders type situation might be the only thing you could do here.
Yeah, it could be pretty cool. Maybe they'll set a time limit. Like, hey, if it's past 90 days, you're going to lose your
title.
But
that feels so silly, because then why are we even doing interim titles if there's a time limit on it? Like,
you got to figure it out. I mean, if it's a perma injury, you just strip it. They've stripped it. So we've seen them strip it. We've seen them do interim. The one I always go back to is the Cody one. The first interim title made the most sense. He had COVID. He couldn't defend it. You had to get an interim champion because that was the promotion. The match was the promoted match. That's what you do. So yeah.
I don't know. I just don't know. Like, it's tough because like, let's say I'm just spitballing here. Let's say you broke your arm, but you're only going to be out like 3 weeks, but you definitely can't wrestle for 3 weeks. Do I put the interim title on somebody in that time? It's a serious injury and you can't wrestle. You can't even be on TV because you should be healing.
Yeah, you probably would. Yeah.
So then what's...
Unless it's literally something that you're only off TV for 2 weeks and no one even notices, that's probably I mean, Cody was only gone 3 weeks.
That's what I mean. It's like it feels like they've shifted it to being like, if it's going to be a long-term injury, that's when we do it. But if it's a short-term injury, then we don't, because then we just hide it and pretend like there's no title for a few weeks.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know.
It's food for thought. I mean, it's an ever-working process, right? So real quick, let's kind of jump through Jamie Hayter's title reign, right? So she wins it All Out. This is a relatively quicker interim title reign.
Yes.
76 days, but she was unbelievably active those 76 days. Like, every fucking week active. She wins the title against Britt Baker, Hikaru Shida, Jamie Hayter in a really fun match at All Out. That week on Dynamite, she has an interim world title eliminator match where she takes on Penelope Ford. Thought that was a really fun match. And then flash forward two Dynamites after that. She defends her title in the Grand Slam four-way against Athena, Britt Baker, and Serena Deeb. Fun little match. Mm-hmm. The following week, Lumberjack match. Tony Storm for the interim title. Tony Storm defeats Serena Deeb. 2 weeks
that
after...
That was a good match.
Yeah, two weeks match. After that, on AW Dark in a world title eliminator, Tony Storm defeats Emi Sakura in a match you and I both really liked.
Yes.
That was really fun.
Banger.
She then defends the interim title against Hikaru Shida on Title Tuesday. She then has a eliminator match against Diamante on Dark. She then defeats Anna Jay AS this past week in an eliminator match. So
literally one match and everything else was fucking spectacular. Like,
yeah, it was pretty nuts. And
Anna Jay's match was still good too. I just think it wasn't.
And in between all of that, I mean, she's got tag matches. She's got with Hikaru Shida and with Athena and Willow and Serena Deeb. I mean, Toni Storm was unbelievably busy, and I thought she did a really good job as an interim champion. I think this is just an example of striking when the iron's hot. When the iron's hot for Jamie Hayter, and this is something that, you know, she got over, and she's going to get rewarded for it. And they went out and had one hell of a fucking match. I will say that.
Yes.
This was Jamie Hayter's best match by a mile. And this is honestly could be my favorite Toni Storm match too. I like this better than the All Out four way. So if that shows you how much I really like this thing, and they got time too, 15 minutes.
Just a beautiful match. Beautiful feud. This is what I remember saying to you, Charlie, when Toni Storm won the championship. The end game of this is Jamie Hayter. I didn't think Hayter was going to win it, but I knew that that's where we were headed, because that is a story that just tells itself. You know?
Coming out of All Out with the Jamie Hayter chance, and how I think All Out really opened their eyes. Like,
I think All Out was one of the first pay-per-views where AEW finally said, you know what? Fuck it. We actually should just do what the fans want. I'm just being real. It's the truth. I feel like there was a long time when AEW said, nope, we know what wrestling is. And now they've finally just accepted that, you know what? Maybe we should just give the fans what they want.
I agree to an extent. They have like the strike when the iron's hot. That is, I mean, the only guy that really got fucked over with that was Wardlow, which is so unfortunate.
The Acclaimed. Let's be real. The Acclaimed would be on
strike
six
when the
levels
iron's
above
hot.
Where they are now if they had somehow known. And nobody can know. But if you could have somehow figured that out, that would have been, they'd be literally probably the biggest tag team in the world right now. And they're pretty close, but like, goddamn, that would have sent them into the stratosphere. But
yeah, so speaking of the Acclaimed, we are coming into our feud with Swerve and Our Glory, and we kind of figured this would be the finale of the feud. During the promo package, Keith Lee says, we don't need a cheat code because I am the cheat code. I really like that. Swerve debuting a new mask in his entrance. Caster was just straight up roasting people. The line that stuck with me, Keith Lee, is looks like the guy from The Blind Side.
Fucking roasting him, dude. Like, he had the line about fucking what was it? It was shit. It was super good. It was I can't remember what it was. He compared them to somebody. I can't remember who it was.
Oh, the Black Jay and Silent Bob.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Like, come on, dude.
That was good. So Bowens and Swerve get some nice exchanges to get us rolling. Mm-hmm. Bowens is selling hard from the beatdowns. Lee actually ends up then laying waste to Bowens, so they're really starting to sell a knee. And Swerve fucks up Bowens with a nice jaw to the face. He fucking jawed his ass. I thought that was nice. Bowens finally gets some offense going. He flips Keith Lee. There's a mini scissor party on the outside. Caster's landing some moves to Keith and Swerve. Bowens ends up hitting a really nice knee strike into a nice cutter on Swerve. Keith saves Swerve from going through the guardrail. Caster puts Keith Lee then through the guardrail. The first ooh, sister me daddy chant starts breaking out. Swerve hits a really nice flatliner on Bowens. Bowens kicks out of a Swerve kill shot kick. Another two kill shots by Swerve. Another kill shot by on Bowens, and he kicks out at two. Bowens lands the arrival. Caster hits the mic drop. Keith breaks it up. Bowens can't pick up Swerve, and he's getting face kicked. Keith is now legal, and he's just running fucking roughshod. There's a couple of pounces everywhere. And then a finisher is hit on Caster, and he kicks out at two.
I'm sorry. I'm just going to cut in here and say that that fucking Beal just needs to be renamed to Yeet Lee.
Yeet Lee. The crowd is fucking losing it after the Swerve and Our Glory hit their finisher on Caster and he kicks out. They're going nuts. Swerve finds some pliers. He's going after Castler's fingers. Daddy Ass doesn't allow that shit. He runs out. Some really loud Daddy Ass chants. Swerve wants Keith to use the pliers to cheat. He wants him to turn to the dark side, but he won't do it. Swerve slaps the piss out of Keith Lee. Keith then starts walking out. He says he's not doing this shit anymore. Bowens hits a really nice combo, ending with a super kick. The JML driver by Swerve is reversed by Bowens. Finisher time. The Acclaimed retain. This match had the distance. This was about 20 minutes. And this felt like the last chapter in the book of The Acclaimed and Swerve in Our Glory.
It did.
It's the last chapter of the feud. It's the last chapter of, well, Swerve in Our Glory is about to have another chapter of the feud that they go into.
Yeah, I imagine.
But I thought this match was excellent. This feud has been unfucking real. Both parties are more over than they were before. And yeah, what'd you think of this match? And I guess, what'd you think of the feud overall, now that it's probably the last time?
I thought it was really great overall. I feel like this elevated both teams. I feel like both Keith Lee and Swerve are going to be massive single stars coming out of this, and the Acclaimed have now become, I think it's fair to say, the biggest tag team in AEW at this point. I mean, maybe not the best, but certainly the most popular, maybe the most known by the fans, beloved by the fans. I think it's them at this point.
Yeah, we've had our unbelievable three of FTR, Young Bucks, and Lucha Brothers, but there's always people that can crack in there. And the Acclaimed, the fact that they're a homegrown team too, which is pretty nuts. It's pretty cool to see.
Yeah, I think it was kind of quiet, but we did get some "Oh Scissor Me Daddy" chants. We did, and I did put in my notes, Charlie, this might have to go down as the feud of the year. JAS versus BCC's been on everything, but this has been consistent the entire time.
It's been nuts. Even the side stuff, the Bowens and Swerve singles match, the Daddy Ass and Swerve match, you know, I've liked them all.
And the crowd's been into all of it. Like, you can't say that every other one of those teams has always got the entirety of the crowd behind it, because they do sometimes. And some other matches, it's like, oh, this is, where's the audience going? You know, like, whereas the Acclaimed, they do numbers. We know that for a fact. The Acclaimed are also super popular with just the AEW fan base in general.
And the merch sales.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. They're top t-shirt sellers. I mean, the fact that the "Oh Scissor Me Daddy" shirt went to number one immediately tells you everything you need to know right there. You know, like, and other things that I noticed in this match is that I keep saying this, and I'll keep saying it until he turns a babyface again, but Swerve is so goddamn good at this heel work, man. So fucking good at it. And this was no different. He was all over the place in this match. It was like he walked out, and it's like, it's from that entrance. They wanted you to know what the vibe was when he had that mask on. Swerve is
That's
the
a good
Joker.
Way of putting it. Yeah.
He is the evil bastard that we all expected him to be. And the Acclaimed also hit some really good combo offense in this. Their combination offense is getting really good. Almost to the level of like regular, like multi-year tag teams, you know, I mean, they are at this point, but I'm saying like people that have been wrestling for like 5-10 years on the indies or whatever, like that have just like a million moves they know how to do together. Like they're starting to get to that point. There was a really nice crossbody that was hit on Keith Lee, which sent him through the barricade. Like you, like, I think, I don't know if you mentioned that or not, but that was a nuts spot. That's a classic Swerve thing, by the way, the whole barricade spot. That's, he loves that shit. So I love seeing that. And yeah, Keith Lee refuses to turn to the dark side. Clearly Keith Lee versus Swerve is going to be one of our big matches at Winter is Coming. And man, it's going to be a banger, I imagine, because they've been working together now for months and months and months. So, you know, they know each other even better than they probably already did when they were tag team partners before. And man,
pretty much since they arrived, man, following the Team Taz feud. And we really like that.
Yes, we said that earlier, like Team Taz, one of our favorite teams, like, and we were like the only people that were into Team Taz. Like, it's why Team Taz got cut, because no one was really into it. But like, and also, you know, it's storylines. But I mean, like, other than that, like, you know, like, I just, yeah. And by the way, love the respect that this match got by being the second to last match on the show. That says a lot.
It really does. So, you know, kind of just looking at some updates I was getting on my phone. They finally did announce the next pay-per-view now. So it is going to be in San Francisco, March 5th. So we got some time, man. We got Winter is Coming. There'll be some fun shows in January. And March 5th, AEW Revolution.
Is that Revolution? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so I can't wait to see what that card looks like from here on out.
We're going to have a hot minute with no fucking pay-per-views, huh?
Yeah, that full gear stretch last year, November 13th to March 6th, this year, November 19th to March 5th. So that stretch, I mean, can it be filled again by fun TV?
We'll have Ring of Honor Final Battle in there.
Yep, that's one of the differences this year. We're going to have Ring of Honor Final Battle. That'll be cool. So let's get into our main event.
Okay.
But before we had that, that was when they announced the AEW World Trios Championship Best of 7 Series. This is so smart, right? The Elite and Death Triangle, Best of 7. I'll run through the dates real quick. This week on Dynamite, match 2. Next week on Dynamite, match 3. 2 weeks later at Winter is Coming, match 4. Week after that, December 21st, AEW Holiday Bash, match 5. At New Year's Smash, the following week, December 28th, match 6. And when they go to the Kia Forum, match 7, it says if necessary, bullshit. January 11th at the Kia Forum, match 7, the Elite versus Death Triangle.
So let me just ask you this question, because I have to ask this because it just popped into my head. Is this going to work out in a way where whoever wins the most of the 7 matches is the champion?
Correct. I think the champion will be crowned January 11th.
Okay, that's perfect. So you're literally saying that if they win, because I don't think they're going to win with a sweep. I can't imagine.
No, I
if they win, it's going to be 7 weeks from now. Dude, that's basically a pay-per-view build.
And it's going to be sick.
Or, sorry, 6 weeks from now, I should say. This match is
so cool, too, dude.
6 like, weeks. We're going to get 6 weeks of this insane match. And then we're going to possibly get the Elite as a Trios champions again, dude.
And when the Sheamus and Cesaro Best of 7 thing happened, I remember you and I were like, why don't more people do this?
Well, I know at the time when it first happened, I was like, what a stupid thing. Because no one was really into that feud at all.
Yeah. They bought in.
Yes, like by match 3, everyone was like, every one of these matches is good. Like, they could keep this up. And then by the time we got to match 7 and they became a tag team, I mean, that ended up being one of the biggest things that happened in whatever the year that was. Like, that was insane. And we were all like,
what if this is something they start doing with the Trios title, like once a year? They just have a little 2-month stretch of a best of 7.
That might be a great way to open the year every year, just with a best of 7 for those titles. Because,
oh my God, man, that's so fucking good. So yeah, we had the Holiday Bash, New Year's Smash. We got a whole bunch of extra little fun Dynamites that we'll be hitting. So let's jump into it. John yes. Moxley, MJF, AEW World Championship. MJF, he's getting the babyface reactions. He's motorboating some titties. Are you kidding me?
Fuck?
This match felt big. I wrote this match. My man really said, feels
damn!
Huge.
And he had to.
What if that wasn't even a plant? Like, what if that was just literally someone that was
I can't imagine it being somebody that wasn't a plant. That was... That didn't seem like they would plant that.
Win that match after that. Straight up. Mox, so here's the story, right? Mox is laying in the heavy hits. There's some Let's Go MJF chants. They try to get Let's Go Mox chants. Those died really quickly. And those chants, you get a little crazy later on. MJF is doing his little run in the ropes. Crowd is eating it up. He's just taunting Mox. The crowd then starts to boo Mox. MJF is the face. Mox is embracing the heat. He starts laying in some more offense. MJF bites the wrist when he's in a headlock. He sells for a bit. Mox here is being methodical. You know, in the promos, in the build-up to the feud, he's been very, like, tepid in what he's saying, and he's kind of keeping a certain pace to it. He's keeping a certain tone. And yeah, you felt that tone in the match at the beginning. You really did. Mox is feeling confident here that MJF can't hang with him. There's a failed spray attempt from MJF, and Mox is just like, dude, you're nothing. That was what you tried to do to me, and it didn't work. MJF finally hits a big comeback move after returning to the ring. He gets in his little jabs that he's kind of going nuts with. He does his turnbuckle spot where he's slamming the head repeatedly. I remember that. That was one of the moves that first stuck out to me in MLW with him. True shit. The tables get set up. MJF lands the tombstone on the apron. He's selling his knee after this. Did his knee slip out of the...
I just got to jump in really quick. This was a brilliant spot they did here.
Yes, it was.
So MJF has set up this table to do a pile driver through the table. And that's a spot we've seen people do before in AEW. It's kind of become a classic AEW spot. Really dangerous, I'm sure, but it's really cool looking. And Mox just barely gets enough of his weight down to where when Max hits the tombstone on the apron, it busts his knee. And now he can't get him back up for the pile driver, which gives Mox the perfect opportunity to then reverse the move into his own pile driver through the table, which I just thought was a brilliant way to use that spot to not have to have Max look like an idiot and get put through a table he set up. He actually tried to hit it, and it just didn't work out because of the option that he went with when he got Mox in that tombstone. So I just thought that was really good. That's just high IQ MJF wrestling right there.
The story of this, it's a beautiful story, man. It's a story that we're following along with, too. After that, there's a 9 count. You know, is he going to let is this going to get ruined by this? Because
he had this look on his face at the count of 8, or maybe it was 7, that like it looked like, the only way I can describe it to you, Charlie, is it looked like the look of somebody who can see their only opportunity, what they might think is their only opportunity to become a great wrestler or great, slipping away. That's what it felt like when I saw that on his face.
The facial expressions, man, just unbelievable. He gets back in the ring immediately, paradigm shift. Shit, here we go. It's a 2 count. Figure 4 leg lock. And this is going on for like 2.5 minutes here. These figure 4, they're twisting back and forth. He's getting, you know, the 1, 2, because he can't lay down, because he can't stop the pain. Mox is just putting him in a whirlwind of hell. Really good stuff. MJF with a heat seeker is very nice. Max counters MJF into his hurt knee. He works even more on the hurt knee. And that's when the fuck you Moxley chants break out. Mox is again picking apart his food. He's landing some of the signature BCC moves. An avalanche paradigm shift for a 2 count.
That was one of my favorite parts of this match. It was almost like those Blackpool Combat Club spots were corrupted slowly over the course of this match.
Yes. Dude, the story here is fucking awesome. It's so good. I can't believe it, man. That way to put it, it was corrupting him. The 2 count for the rope break. If you guys don't know this, I'm a sucker for a good rope break. I like a good rope break.
My favorite. That was your little signal too, the little fingy.
Yep. Kevin Owens with the fucking finger rope break still is my favorite rope break ever. So good. Give me your fucking best shot.
Who the hell was he even wrestling? Was that Jericho?
Is either AJ Styles or Sami Zayn or Chris Jericho is one of them. I can't remember.
I think it might have been at WrestleMania. I'm not even kidding.
I think so. He says, Mox is saying, give me your best fucking shot. Hit me, motherfucker. MJF spits, a lot of bitch slapping going on, because Mox then just slaps that motherfucker across the fucking face. There's the yeah, the boo forearm symphony. Yeah, boo. MJF's getting the yeah. Mox is getting the boo. I bet he liked this. He probably loved playing the heel, man. He was really embracing that heat.
You could tell how fucking much fun he was having, dude. Like, you could just see it. And he was just like, and the way he stared down the crowd, like, really? You're going to side with this guy? Okay.
You're going to side with this piece of shit? Really?
They're like, okay.
MJF no. then pulls the ref in front, and Mox makes connection. MJF has the diamond ring. Regal wants him to put it down. He gives into it. He fucking throws it down. He's all pissed off. Mox is behind him. Max is flipping off Regal. Mox gets behind him, chokes him up. There's a really good two count. Another ref jumps up. Then both refs are knocked out. There's a bulldog choke. MJF is tapped. He's tapping out. The refs are all fucked up, so nothing's happening. Regal tosses MJF the brass knuckles.
Let me just say how fucking smooth that looked, too.
Are you kidding me? This is the passing of the torch of the brass knuckles. He just passed the torch. MJF cracks Moxley over the skull. He wins the title. He's the new world champion. He's celebrating over Moxley's dead carcass. He's then doing snow angels on the goddamn ramp. Regal was the devil all along. And I just think, man, the promos, I almost want to go back and look at everything again now, knowing that this is what they were planning. Regal was the one that he, the whole time, Regal was the devil. MJF is the official holder now.
No, Charlie, you don't even have to go back. I can tell you right now that if you go back to the original promo, because I've rewatched it like 97 times because it was that good. a big through line of that was that it wasn't that he thought Mox was the devil. He still thought he was the devil.
Yeah.
And he was saying, MJF, you're not on my level. But then MJF proved him wrong by going out there and trying to fool everyone into thinking. I think that's the whole story here, is that he went to Max after their interaction. And they must have planned something out where he was going to pretend to be leaning in to what. Because I don't think the story here is that, oh, he saw that he finally was willing to do it the right way, and that's why he helped him. No, he didn't care. It was never about that. He just wanted to set him up to lose against Mox. The truth is, he wanted to help MJF the whole time, and he could see the writing on the wall for Mox. I think that's what the whole idea was. I'd have to, like you said, go back through and get the exact lines.
Yeah.
But I believe
What happens to the Combat Club from here? What
it's going to implode. Charlie, that's been the story the last several weeks. They have been having slowly building tensions. Wheeler hasn't been on TV for the last couple weeks because of his actions, and we're going to assume that that's probably related, at least in storyline. You know what I mean? That he hasn't been on because they've been giving him a few weeks off because of him getting, you know, hot with Danielson and all that. And Danielson's not been fully on point. He's been losing matches because of that. We have Mox losing the championship, which obviously shows that he's unsettled. We have all of this tension building up in the Blackpool Combat Club. Charlie, I think it's about to implode.
Are we about to get like months of Blackpool Combat Club inner fucking feuding of just megasonic meat matches?
Or alternatively, Charlie, and this is something I think is possible, I think it could be that MJF just replaces Mox.
Whoa.
And that like maybe the story there is that sort of subtle hint that's always been there from day one with Mox oh my God, William Regal not quite being on the same page. Because remember, what was the first thing that he did when he got to AEW, when he made his promo after he split the two of them apart at the previous pay-per-view on Revolution? He said, "This is the best wrestler in the world, Bryan Danielson. That's why I respect him." And then he basically called Mox a piece of shit. And that's why he liked him. Because he reminded him of himself when he was younger. That would be kind of an insult to most people. So I think this has been subtly being planted in the back of our minds since day one.
Oh, I love it, man. I really do. Needless to say, I think for both of us, this really delivered. I think Full Gear was a resounding success. I'm very happy with I'm very happy with the year of pay-per-views we had. Our main events, Adam Page versus Adam Cole at Revolution, Adam Page versus CM Punk at Double or Nothing, John Moxley versus Hiroshi Tanahashi at Forbidden Door, Moxley versus Punk at All Out, and Moxley versus MJF at Full Gear. Now, obviously, I think both of us wish the Punk thing worked out differently than it did. And, you know, it's...
It's still crazy to me that Punk versus Hangman match is still one of the biggest matches of the year. Like,
it was incredible. That Double or Nothing match was so good. And the feeling of Punk winning and that Dynamite the next week with him and FTR, it was so fucking cool, man.
Man.
But it's a different era now, man. MJF, Jamie Hayter, those are our world champions. And, you know, MJF, world champion, Samoa Joe, TNT champion, Orange Cassidy, All Atlantic champion, Hook, FTW champion, our tag champs, the Acclaimed are the tag champs, Death Triangle, the Trios champs, and then our women's champs, Thunder Rosa, technically, Jamie Hayter interim, and Jade Cargill. Jade Cargill, who is coming up on a year of, and this is something people have been pointing out, I mean, she's one of the most dominant black wrestlers ever. Like, she, the records have not been that long from what people were pointing out, mainly in WWE and stuff, and she's already at a full year not losing, and that's, I don't think that's ending anytime soon. I mean, really, I truly don't think that's ending anytime soon. And
I mean, I agree, but for different reasons. So, I don't think it's because it's spectacular. I think I just don't know what to do. I think that stuff is great. I'm really glad that that's a thing. But I think this is kind of the problem at this point, is like, they know that she's great and they know that she can do more, especially without having to have the TBS title, which I do think she's actually elevating more than it's elevating her at this point. I think
1000%.
Well, I'm saying in the way that I think that her being champion, I think if she wasn't champion, she would be in the exact same spot she is now. Whereas I think if somebody else was in doing exactly the same storyline as her, that they would actually, it would probably work. And I just mean that I think that she doesn't need the championship. They don't need the championship either, but the championship would elevate them. I don't know if it's a good reflection that she doesn't, that she almost would benefit to not having it, you know, if that makes sense. Because I don't know why I feel that way, but I do. Because there's just no end in sight. Because I'm all for everyone being dominant and us breaking and shattering records, but we shouldn't be breaking and shattering records because we don't have a way out. That feels like that's you're not actually doing the work. You're just saying, well, I actually don't know how to fix, like, I don't know how to make her a bigger star, so I'm just going to keep her in this corner for forever. So that's the only problem I have with the TBS championship.
The stars eventually
it feels
come
like it's trapping Jade at this point. From being able to go out and make the show bigger, because she would. And I find it difficult to find somebody. I would find it difficult to find somebody that would be able to make an argument convincingly that if she was not TBS champion right now, that the AEW would benefit significantly from
She'd be on TV about 65% less, just like Athena. I mean, I think it's the whole thing of there's two women segments a night. So at least if she's champion, that's their excuse to put the title on. But again, if they never had the title, would that be the story? Who knows? But
I'm just saying, I think she would have made it anyway. I think she's that.
Oh, I do too. Talent.
I just don't think that at this point, and maybe at one point it was a benefit to her to have the championship, but I think at this point it's just dragging her down at this point. Cause it's like, they don't know what to do with it. And they can't put together a good storyline with it. So it's like, until they can do those things, the undefeated streak can work, but championship reign just doesn't make any sense to me. Like, because I feel like, hear me out. I know I'm going long here on an already super long show, but hear me out. Jade Cargill is talented enough that if she had just won the championship and lost it the next night, I'm not kidding you, it would not have affected her ability to get over and stay over and be this unstoppable force one iota. And I think that might have been the misstep, was maybe it shouldn't have been, like, obviously it shouldn't have been a 1 day title reign. Maybe it should have been 3 months. And then find a way to not completely lose all the momentum of having her lose the title. And I feel like that's the point where it all got lost. Because I think they agree with me on that. I think that was the plan. I don't think she was ever planned on being a 6-year champion. I don't think that was ever the plan, you know? Because I don't see how that, again, I don't see how that benefits anybody. You've got to make more stars eventually, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that might have been the plan, but then they just didn't have anybody they felt comfortable putting it on, man. I think that's genuinely what it is. Like, and so because of that, now it feels like it hurts Jade. So I don't know. We'll see in the future, though.
Yeah, I don't know how long she's going to be champion. And I'm telling you, there's the day she drops it, I'll give it 3-4 weeks before she's going for the world title. And
well, if that's the case, then why are we not headed there? That's, I've been saying that the whole time. Come on.
We're not headed there because Jamie's champion now. So they're going to run Jamie for about 6 months. And then
what I'm saying is, 6 months ago, that should have been the plan. Like, it should have been, get this TBS title on her, make it mean something, have her hold it for a little bit of time. Then yeah. Once that's established, which was way earlier than I think anybody thought, that championship would have meant so much more than the rest of the championships, you know? And then have it go on to somebody who needs it more, and then have Jade go after the world title. That was always my argument. I've been making that argument for months. So well, I don't know
I'm
why.
I'm sure when they drop it, that's what they're going to do with her, but yeah, she's still building up the resume week to week. You know, now she's beaten Nyla Rose, which is definitely the biggest name so far for the title that she's beaten. I mean, that's the former champion. I want to say that's the first former women's world champion she's beat. But yeah, guys, that's going to be it for us. So I hope you really enjoyed our full gear coverage. And as you can tell, we got a lot coming up, man. There's a lot of stuff that's going to be answered over the coming months. We got the Best of Seven. We got this Wednesday, we got Ethan Page and Ricky Starks, Ishii and Chris Jericho, Orange Cassidy and Jake Hager. There's some really fun stuff coming up. So, yeah, I think Full Gear, needless to say, in a thumbs up, thumbs down world, was a thumbs down. Fuck this show.
Yeah, now, get the fuck out of here.
Get the fuck out. Thumbs up all day. We'll catch you guys next Sunday when we're talking about Ricky Starks going on to face MJF, motherfucker. Let's go.
Let's go. He's better than you, and you know it.